owe it to them to reform police practices, to make sure that no other young woman like Sandra Bland is ever pulled out of a car for no good reason and thrown into a jail where she is found dead.
I believe they should. They have a binding search order. And listen, anytime you're dealing with issues of security and civil liberties, you got to balance them both. And I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time.
And a poll just came out, USA Today, shows I beat Hillary Clinton. I'm going to beat her so easily, but it just came out 2 minutes ago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10. Today is Thursday. It's February 18th, 2016. Welcome to it. We have a busy show for you today. Coming up on the show today, we're going to talk about Fast Forward Labs, data technology. And I'm going to throw a term out at you, see if you know what it means, because it's going to be our first question to our first guest today. It's called technology, the machine intelligence capabilities. Remember that, because we're going to tell you what that means coming up today. Also today, we've been talking a lot about mortgage rates, and in our second segment, we're going to be talking with David Hochberg about whether maybe now might be a good time or a bad time to refinance your mortgage. All things mortgages coming up, and then later in the show, we'll have a discussion about toys. The toy fair was just wrapping up in New York. But first, your morning global market intelligence. Asian stocks mostly posted strong gains today as a rebound in the price of oil and solid U.S. manufacturing data boosted European markets and Wall Street. Hong Kong's Hang Seng surged about 2.4%. Japan's Nikkei and South Korea's Kospi were also higher today. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve said U.S. factories cranked out more autos, furniture, and food last month, boosting production by the most since July. Manufacturing output rose just about 0.5% in January after falling in the four of the five previous five months. On Wednesday, the Dow Jones Industrials gained about 257 points. That's about 1.5% to 16,454. The NASDAQ also rose about a percent and a half, and the NASDAQ jumped about 2.2% to 4,534. Today, the Labor Department is going to report on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. Also, Freddie Mac will report on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. We'll talk to David Hochberg about that. And the mortgage company will also release its quarterly financial results before the market opens today. Walmart stores reporting earnings before the markets open as well. Japan says its trade balance returned to deficit in January with a shortfall of about $646 billion. This as exports fell 13% for the same month of the year, with shipments to China tumbling about 18%. Customs data released Thursday shows that exports dropped 5.35 trillion yen, while imports have plunged about 18% to 6 trillion yen. Panasonic Corporation says it will recognize same-sex marriages in its employment policies in a rare move for a major Japanese manufacturer. The company says it will announce the new policy and put it into effect in April. Well, on the opening bell this morning, we want to hit it right off with our first guest is Catherine Hume. She leads sales and marketing for a company called Fast Forward Labs. You can find her at Hume Catherine on Twitter. Catherine, good morning and welcome to the opening bell.
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. We threw out a term at the beginning of the show, machine intelligence capability. Could you explain that to us?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
So I think the way to start is to think that machine intelligence capability is basically the ability for algorithms to tease out information and insights that exist in data sets. So we work with a lot of organizations that have tons of data, some of them having accumulated it over the past hundreds of years. And there's a lot of intelligence, let's say, that lies in latent in this data. And machine intelligence is basically a set of algorithms that one can throw at data and they improve their performance over time as they learn, you know, they learn new insights from the data that they're given. It's a fancy way of saying machines that can derive insights from data.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I wanted to ask, you know, what sort of company would be a good example of this?
All sorts of companies, actually. So an example, the company I was thinking of when I mentioned the 100 years of stored data is some large insurance companies, life insurance companies that we work with, who've been collecting actuary data about their insurees over hundreds of years. We see this also with large financial services companies, banks, even media companies or publishing companies that have had paper records and then are gradually shifting over to the digital space.
So coming up in our next segment, we're going to take a break here for traffic, Catherine, but I want to talk to you about how you help companies use this intelligence and how you push them forward in these areas.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking with Catherine Hume of Fast Forward Labs at Hume Catherine on Twitter, and Fast Forward Labs is at Fast Forward Labs on Twitter. Catherine, before the break, we were talking about machine intelligence and all of the data that some of these companies have, the long-term companies like insurance companies, those sorts of companies. And you mentioned before the break that your company helps these other companies understand their technology, utilize some of it, and find ways to move forward. Give us an example of that, and what is it that you do to move companies forward that have this big lug of data that they're hauling around?
Yeah, absolutely. So one example of one of the technologies we've studied recently is called natural language generation. And what this does is it takes data in something like an Excel spreadsheet, so data just listed out, and it automatically writes a report that describes the insights in the data. And a big shout out to Chicago. There's a company there called Narrative Science that's one of the key players in the space here. And we find that this is really just enabling organizations to do a lot more with the insights, with the data insights that they have, because it renders it accessible and easily understandable to people that might not have a technology background. So the intelligence side there is the machine just taking some numbers and automatically writing a story that communicates insights about that data.
And you suggested in your answer that some of these companies might have nuggets of potential new business or potential new areas of earnings in this data. Is that something that you find regularly?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So just with that example, if we tease that out a little bit more with these automated articles, these can be personalized to different types of consumers. So say we have an e-commerce business that's something like Amazon, right, that's selling products to different people across the country, across the world, and they all have different tastes and different interests and different things they want to buy. And it would be impossible for one single marketing or sales representative to write billions of emails that are customized to the consumer taste, but you can do that with software. So it's opening up huge opportunities for personalization and new types of products.
It also would seem to me that you would be able to, and as a sales and marketing person, you might be able to talk about this. That is, the trends over many, many years, and if you have an insurance company that has hundreds, 100 years or more of data, the trends that you'd be able to pull out of that would be invaluable to somebody in the sales and marketing department.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it has to do with customer bases across different geographies, ways in which one can think about approaching the markets in different geographies in more tailored ways. Sometimes there's surprising insights that have to do with even reducing the bottom line, right? So finding new ways to drive efficiencies across different workflows using patterns that arise out of data that might not be intuitive to the people that are practicing the processes on a daily basis.
And so what about pitfalls that might come into play here? First of all, when you say data, most people cringe a little bit because they think of what you have to do to secure that data. That's number one. And then number two, how costly is it to go through all of this data?
Well, definitely, yes. Security, privacy are always of concern. And there's different types of techniques depending on how long one stores the data, right? There's ways to treat it as a stream so as to reduce some of that security and privacy, the privacy impact. It does take time to clean data sets to make sure that they're ready to go into production. But I'd say the biggest pitfall is actually in trends, right? So just like in everything else in the world, politics, fashion, there's actually some trends in data science, and there are certain algorithms that will rise in popularity in a given time. And sometimes people will sort of, you know, get pigeonholed into thinking that these trendy models will be the best approach for a problem, when that might not always be the case. Sometimes a simple classic solution is really the best approach to a problem. So the advice we give to people is you really have to step back, approach, ask some basic questions. What do I have? What problem can I solve? And really make sure that that the models that you're using are impactful for the business.
On the security front, do you think we're going to nail this down and be able to secure data in a way that people are not going to be able to break into it? Is that the next chapter in data?
That's a great question, and it's a question a lot of people are working on. Well, the one thing to know about the security space is that the bad guys are pretty smart, and they tend to evolve more quickly than the good guys, the security professionals and companies that are trying to protect their data against attacks. So where machine intelligence can come in here is that these systems that we work with have the ability to track what's normal, sort of normal behavior, and then identify systems that are doing something that's a little bit strange so that they can stay ahead of, you know, ahead of what's coming next.
Let me ask you this. Going through this data, do you ever find anything, a nugget of history that maybe you didn't know before that you take away, that you learn either about a company or about yourself or about a business that you might be able to share with folks?
Yeah, sure. So this actually comes from the New York Historical Society that currently has an exhibit about computer history in New York over the past 100 years. And there's one that I love. There's an example exhibit that features Claude Shannon, who's sort of known as the father of information theory, with a little mouse that he built that is a machine learning mouse. It's able to make mistakes and go through a maze. And then once it's sort of learned the path, it can then complete the path in the maze without any mistakes. And I saw this, and this goes back to sort of getting out of the closed-mindedness of trends. We assume that machine intelligence is new and it's hot and it's just coming to the shore today, but back in the 1950s, there were people working on these problems, and it was just awesome to see Claude Shannon playing around with an example of machine learning back in the 50s.
Catherine Hume is the lead on marketing and sales at a company called Fast Forward Labs. You can find Catherine on Twitter at Hume Catherine and Fast Forward Labs at Fast Forward Labs. Catherine, thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's great.
It's 527 on WGN 720.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37. Later on today, the Labor Department's going to report on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits, but we're going to be watching a Freddie Mac report on this week's average U.S. mortgage rates. Company's also going to release its quarterly financial results, but we'll be watching those mortgage rates because our next guest, David Hochberg, is in the business of helping people refinance. David, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for getting up and coming in this morning. This is an issue that a lot of people have been talking about lately, and that is with the threat of interest rates going up.
Yes.
Maybe two or three or four times this year.
Mm-hmm.
Is now a good time to raise interest rates? Or is now a good time to refinance,
It's never a good time to raise interest rates, Steve, but right. It's a great time. It's a terrible time to raise interest rates. No, it's always here. I always answered that question this way. If you could save money by refinancing and it doesn't cost you anything to refinance and you're putting your family and your business and yourself in a better position to refinance, then it's a great time to refinance, okay? It's just people overthink it. Oh, I'm going to wait till next week. It's going to go down another eighth. And it's like, really? You know, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a teacher. I'm a truck driver. I'm an accountant. I do this, then the other thing. I say, are you a bond trader? They're like, no. Why? I'm like, because the interest rates are based upon what the bonds do. And unless you're a guy or girl down the bond pit, you really don't know what's going to happen. So don't gamble.
David is the Vice President of Lending at Pearl Mortgage. You can find him on Twitter at David Hochberg, Hochberg. We talked about this Freddie Mac report coming out today.
Yeah.
How does that impact the state of mortgages today and next week?
It confuses the heck out of people because what people don't realize is all of those numbers that you get are a trailing average of what happened a month ago, a week ago. So last week, rates were lower than they are this week. The problem is everybody hears that rates are down. So Monday through Thursday morning of last week, the rates were a little lower than they were today. They're still at historical lows. You could still get a 30-year fix that probably starts with a 3 or a 4 instead of a 7 or a 9, or still getting people out of 9 and 10% mortgages, if you could believe that. So you have to be careful of those averages because they're an average and they're an average of what has happened in the past, not what's happening right now.
You know, I hear a lot of people lately talk about 2008 and whether or not we're headed there again.
Right.
Some concern that the Federal Reserve, the Fed folks may not have a good handle on what is happening. Where do you land in this? I mean, is this something to be concerned about? Should we be worried about headed?
No, I think back then, between 2002 and 2007, at the end of 2007 and the beginning of 2008, when the wheels completely fell off the train, it was the Wild West days of lending, okay? If you had a pulse, you could get a loan. There were a lot of different things going on, a lot easier loan products to get, and people were taking out loans that they couldn't afford or they knew what they were doing but didn't want to admit what they were doing, okay? Today, with Dodd-Frank and all the regulations, and when everything went to heck and a handbasket in 07, 08, the federal government came in and clamped everything down. I always give this example that the water was throwing through a 48 or 72-inch water main, and it just kept flowing and flowing and flowing. And then all of a sudden, one day, all the banks went out of business, and the water was coming through a half-inch water main. And when that liquidity stopped, everybody got into trouble. It's like the music chairs, right? When the music stopped and there's only one chair left, you got 1,000 butts trying to put your butt on one chair. That's what happened in the mortgage industry. Mm-hmm. So everything got out of whack. People that were trying to use their home's equity, that had home equity line of credits, what did the banks do? They froze them because your home was worth 30 to 40, in some areas, 60 to 70% less. So that has turned itself around. Do I think we're ever going to be back in 2008? No, not with all the regulations that you have to do, ordering tax returns before people submit loans, W-2s for the past 2-3 years, pay stub. If there's any type of discrepancy, you need 15 layers of explanation to explain why there is a $15 difference in your pay stub this month from last month. And it's tightened down a lot, so it's a lot more financially difficult to get the loans done, a lot more paperwork, but the loans that we're doing are a lot stronger than they were last year, you know, let alone in 2002 through 2008.
You know, as a kid growing up, a young man growing up, I was always told by my grandparents and parents that having a home, buying a home is always the best investment you can make.
Right, true.
Is it still the case? Do you still fall? Because I hear some experts say that's not the case anymore, that you may be better off renting a place.
Well, it depends what your goals are, okay? You know, you've got the millennials right now who bounce around to jobs every 6, 8, 9 months, and they like to travel, and owning a home's not important to them, and they're very transient, and there's 4 or 5 living in an apartment, and that's fine. If that's what you want, God bless you, okay? If you're starting out and you're a family and you're professionals and you've got kids and you want them in a certain school district and it's in a good area. I live in the northern suburbs. I'm in Northbrook. Northbrook's a great investment. I was just out in Oak Brook the other day. Great investment, okay? Property, I'm seeing homes going up in Northbrook every single day. I'm seeing homes going up in Oak Brook every day. It's like Baskin Robbins, Steve. Okay, there's a different flavor. There's 31 flavors, so you could try one every different day of the month. So to answer that question for a specific person is tough. I personally think it's a great investment. I bought in Northbrook. I paid $600-some thousand for my home in 2002. Okay, it shot all the way up, and in 08 it dropped down, mm-hmm. and I refinanced twice in that time period, and my house kept dropping down, and now my home is back up to where it was, mm-hmm. basically where it was in 07, 08. My wife is freaking out every time we got the appraisal. She's like, oh, my God, we lost another $30,000. I'm like, did we really lose $30,000? She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, do you plan on moving anytime in the next 10 years until our kids graduate Glenbrook North High School? She's like, no. I'm like, then we haven't lost anything. Okay, so you haven't lost paper money. Unless you have to move tomorrow, you've lost it. Now we're back to where we were prior to the crash, and everything in the northern suburbs and the North Shore area is back 100%, and people are now, what are they doing? They're refinancing when they couldn't. They're taking money out to pay off debt that they accumulated when they were going through a rough time, when they were off of work or lost income. They're taking money out of their homes right now to invest back into their homes that they haven't done in 6 to 8 years. You ask a contractor how his business or her business is right now. It's booming.
Yeah. And you mentioned Northbrook, but are there other hot areas of the Chicago area for real estate right now?
Basically anything, the downtown market, blazing fire. The condo market 7-8 years ago, if you said condo, people would run from you. Today, if you said condo, people are putting 4 or 5 offers in front of you because the condo market is absolutely blazing right now. Anything within the concentric circle of 5 to 10 miles outside of the city, solid. Okay, 3-4 years ago when you said Schaumburg, people would shake. Schaumburg is solid right now. And what's happening is you do the concentric circles, it's starting to move further and further and further west. North Shore is all the way back from where we were from the 07-08 collapse. Naperville is completely back. Lyle, Downers, that whole I-88 corridor. You go south to I-55, Plainfield, down to Manteno and Monee, you're starting to see nice. You're not seeing the 5 to 10 to 15% appreciation, the crazy that we were seeing back in the day, but you're getting a nice 2, 3, 4%. And when you tell somebody, hey, guess what? Your home has not decreased in value, that's a plus for them, and they're just happy that they haven't lost 5% in value. So as you get further out, the DeKalbs, the Sycamores, the Kirklands, still a little challenging right now, West Aurora, but it's slowly coming back because all those other areas closer in are completely back. So it will get back out there. It's going to take a little longer.
David Hochberg, Vice President of Lending at Pearl Mortgage, on Twitter at David Hochberg. David, come back on the opening bell?
I'd love to.
Great. Have a great day.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate you coming in.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:50. Dow futures are higher this morning, up 85. The S&P futures up 9. Let's get the latest intel on commodity markets. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Looking at that livestock market yesterday, Wall Street traded higher. Live cattle traded higher yesterday with the April contract up $1.33 a hundredweight, and that was up $1.30 for the day. That means the live cattle trading limit will return to $3 per hundredweight today. And lean hog contracts also had some strength yesterday with the April hog contract up $1 a hundredweight, ending the day at $71.15. And the announcement expected today that President Obama will be traveling to Cuba. We're still waiting to lift the trade embargo there. This is Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. All the hot new toys that kids will be asking for this Christmas have been unveiled at the New York Toy Fair, the largest toy industry trade show in the Western Hemisphere. Joining us to talk about that this morning is Meredith Sinclair. She is with the creator of MeredithPlays.com and the spokesperson for the Genius of Play, a national movement raising awareness about the importance of children's play, spearheaded by the Toy Industry Association. Meredith, these are the hot toys, so what's on the list this year?
Okay, I've got some great things to tell you about. First off, I want to tell you about probably the most popular ride-on of the year, okay? So this is the Razor Hover Tracks, and this is, you might be seeing them around, this is the hands-free smart balancing electric scooter. So the way it's powered is by just the way you shift your feet. It's got this gyro sensor in it, and it's really a smooth-moving ride. And my two boys, they are loving this, and I love it too. I think it's super fun. It's for 13 and up. So that's really, really hot as far as ride-ons. And then another thing that I am loving is I love when toys combine technology and hands-on play. So something called the StickBot Studio Pro, and this is a whole kit that allows kids as young as four and up to create stop-motion animation and stop-motion movies. You get a green screen and this little StickBot, who's this little guy with suction cup hands and feet, and you can pose him, and then you can download an app that has backgrounds and music and sound effects, or kids can use the green screen and do their own backgrounds. So this app takes a bunch of pictures and then it, you know, edits them together into this really cool stop motion video. So I love that. I think kids are going to really enjoy creating these movies and then seeing them and sharing them. You can even share them at hashtag StickBot.
And so that's cool. You're creating a future of movie makers there.
Exactly. The next Steven Spielberg. So it'll be amazing.
Now, the hover. The other thing that you mentioned, that's not the hoverboard where that's been in the news lately that's catching fire, is it?
Okay. Well, this is not that one. Absolutely. This is by Razor. This is a Hover Tracks. What's great about this is important for your listeners, is this is Razor's is the only one with the original patent technology and the highest quality materials. What you want to do is go with a brand that you know that is tested, tried, and true. And this is what this Razor Hover Tracks is. You don't want to go with brands you don't know. You know, you really want to stick to the brands you know and the ones that have been tested, and that's what this Razor Hover Tracks is.
Now, the New York Toy Fair, give us a sense of what this is like, because I would imagine if it's anything like the only thing I can compare it to is like the candy show that comes to Chicago, where there are just millions of new candies and millions of toys. Are there lots of toys that'll just never see the light of day at the show?
Well, I think there are a lot. What you find is, you know, traditionally, Toy Fair has only been for industry, right? So it's lots of things behind closed doors that you have to make appointments to see, and it's things that are coming out that no one's seen before. But then also, this year they're doing Play Fair, which invites families in, too. So it is probably as massive as you're thinking. It's like every brand and every toy you can imagine. I want to tell you about one of those things that'll be is really hot for this next coming year. And, you know, we talk about tablets and technology a lot. Kids love tablets, right? So you don't want to give them your tablet at all. You want to give them one that's, like, meant for them. So Leapfrog Epic has just what parents want, which is they did a survey of 70, and they found that 70% of parents want a kid-friendly interface and age-appropriate content, and they've provided that into one tablet that also has educator-approved content and the most comprehensive parental controls. So that's for 3 to 9. So you're going to see lots of tablets. I really, really like this Leapfrog Epic because as a former educator, it's, you know, a win-win for parents and kids. And then, you know, we're talking about, like, what else you can find at Toy Fair. You know, another tried-and-true brand is Lego. And we often think of Lego as for younger kids. But they have come out with a new line called the Lego Technic line that has 2-in-1 models for kids ages 9 to 16, which I love because I have, you know, boys who build with Legos, and this extends the life of that. So they can build a mine loader or a cutting machine, and then it also has a digital app that comes with it so that they can learn how to do 3D. They can learn from the 3D instructions as well. So that's another thing that's just being launched. And then another trend, you know, every year it's like, what's going to be the new trends for girls in dolls? And this year, Jack's Pacific has come up with a line called the Disney Star Darlings. And what's great about this is these girls have been taken from a popular book series. So girls are reading about the Star Darlings, and then they can extend their reading and they're into play with the Star Darling dolls. And they have these beautiful reflecting eyes and shimmery skin, but they also have like 11 points of articulation, which means they're super playable and fun for girls.
Meredith Sinclair is the creator of MeredithPlays.com, the spokesperson for the Genius of Play, a national movement raising awareness about the importance of toys. She's at the New York Toy Fair, and you can find her again at MeredithPlays.com. That's the opening bell for today. Thanks to our producer, Mary Sandberg. Our engineer this morning is Ben Cortez, with production help from Ross Cochran and Kevin Powell. We'll be back with you bright and early tomorrow morning on the opening bell at 5 a.m.